Social Skills Coaching by Patrick King, a Newton Media Group production. Today is Wednesday, October 14th, 2020. Our topic today is social intelligence. It's about how to fit in, how to captivate people, make powerful impressions, and charm people. Patrick King, in his book, The Science of Social Intelligence, explains how humans are social animals and how we became that way. We all have this point in our lives when major hormonal changes get in the way of almost every aspect of our existence. I'm talking about our adolescence, that critical juncture to adulthood, and yes, I'm also talking about all that angst and newly discovered emotions seeping into our interactions. Years ago, longer than I would like to admit, I was an emotionally anguished teenager. Par for the course, really. One day, the fragile bundle of emotion that was me came to a peak when I encountered a cashier who I thought had been rude to me for weeks. Our normal conversations went something like, "I'll have the salmon bagel." "Is that all?" "Yes, thank you." "Okay, that'll be $3. In just that sliver of interaction, can you feel the cashier's contempt for me? Of course not. I'd made it up in my mind when I decided to be offended at anyone and everything. But what's important is that I believed the story I had created for myself. In doing so, I started to treat this poor cashier like she was the scum of the earth to get even with her, and she actually started becoming impolite to me. Keep in mind, she was a cashier, so she was literally paid to be nice to people, and she had started to speak rudely to me. I must have been a terribly annoying teenager. I had created a story in my mind, acted on it, and brought it to reality in the worst of ways. I didn't realize until far later that this was the Pygmalion effect at work, which states that however you treat someone, that's the person they will become to you. If you treat someone as if they're kind and magnanimous, you will probably encourage that side of them. You'll be generous and caring to them, and they will respond in kind. However, if you treat someone as if they are swine, you won't give them a chance to shine, and you will bring out their worst sides, and that's exactly how I behaved with this poor cashier. That was my first peek into how small things can dramatically make you more likable and charismatic, or the complete opposite. It was a whole new understanding of social intelligence and what it takes to succeed with people. It's not necessarily just knowing the best small talk topics or being able to make powerful eye contact, as magazines and online articles would have you believe. It's so much more than intentional courteous gestures and a pleasant demeanor. How we deal with social situations and people in general has something to do with how our brains operate. All those background processes that lie at the foundations of our thought patterns, cognitive tendencies, and emotions. Like it or not, we make the vast majority of our decisions underneath the surface of our conscious thinking. This is terrifying if you don't understand what your decisions are truly being based on. As the saying goes, knowledge is power. Gaining fuller understanding of how our minds work goes a long way in our search for self-improvement and mindfulness. This is where the book comes in to help. The goal here is to impart understanding of what people are really looking for when they judge and evaluate each other. Some of it will be nearly common sense, while other aspects will be completely counterintuitive. Along the way, you'll learn more about the Pygmalion effect, with dozens of other studies from biological science, social psychology, and even behavioral economics. You are about to embark on a journey into the depths of your mind and discover what gives you the feeling of chemistry with one person and the worst feeling of all with another. Complete apathy and instant disregard. Again, this can be terrifying, but hopefully by the end of this book, you'll see more opportunity than chances to stumble socially. We are ruled by our brains, and our social lives and relationships depend on decoding them. Underneath, we're all wired with the same hardware. Our software is a little different, but our core drives and motivations are just about standardized. Human beings are, both from a biological and evolutionary standpoint, social animals. Regardless of where an individual may fall on the spectrum of intro and extroversion, some amount of social interaction is simply an integral part of life. It's something we want and also something we need. Social intelligence and understanding the relationships that surround us are key to getting what we want in life. Science and research have shown us a way to predictably deal with that which is theoretically the most unpredictable, people. Over 2 millennia ago, the famous philosopher Aristotle was quoted as saying, "Society is something that precedes the individual. Anyone who either cannot lead the common life or is so self-sufficient as to not need to, and therefore does not partake of society, is either a beast or a god." The ability of our species to communicate with each other more effectively than any other species on Earth is the predominant factor that propelled us to the top of the food chain. And as civilization advances, social skills have remained a very important part of what makes people successful as individuals. If you don't understand the science of social intelligence, you won't only be left behind. You'll be unhappy and have difficulty achieving your goals. The importance of being social. Why is it that we so readily understand the importance of developing our physical bodies, of enhancing our intellectual capacity, and of learning skills, but so seldom spare a thought for sociability? Being social is as essentially human as any of our other core needs, and yet we take social intelligence for granted, assuming it'll sort itself out. While we all understand that it might be nice to be liked by plenty of people, have strong friendships, and a healthy social life, not many of us take steps to actually do anything about it. There's good reason to believe that social interaction, and the skills it requires, are a fundamental need for our species. It's simple. Understanding the art of bonding with other human beings is not optional, but essential to who we are and our thriving in this world. In this chapter, we'll look at some key research showing how our ancestors developed this vital ability to connect with one another, and how the need has stayed with us ever since. The benefits of mastering social skills are obvious. Those with stronger social connections are healthier and more robust, have better mental health, and undoubtedly benefit from the resources available on that social network. A 2011 study published by Schultz et al. In the well-known journal Nature, explained how our primitive ancestors who were better at socializing had a fitness and survival advantage over their less sociable peers, particularly as human beings learnt and evolved different foraging styles. Biologists and anthropologists have tried for years to understand exactly how qualities like individual and social behaviors evolve with time. In this study, the researchers suggested that as human beings moved from foraging alone to foraging in more adaptive social groups, and from foraging at night to foraging in the day, a more dangerous time, they developed sophisticated communication, empathy, cooperation, and social rules. In other words, the social reality of human beings evolved a long time ago along with all our other traits. We are hardwired this way today precisely because these behaviors were advantageous for our ancestors. Those who were less sociable did not have this advantage and, consequently, died out millions of years ago. In fact, many believe that our very brains evolved to process the extra data that came with living in a group one had to get along with in order to survive. Our language, our faculty for imagination, our love for storytelling, our social and familial structures, all of these helped our ancestors survive and still help us survive today. It's amazing to imagine that human beings had to actually learn how to be social, in the same way we had to learn to walk upright or use tools. In fact, being social is a bit like a tool in itself, and mankind's early mastery of this skill developed in tandem with his ability to work together with a group and expand his reach. Another more recent article in the same journal proposes that early man developed language primarily as a social skill, i.e., to share advanced ideas with other members of the group. In the 2015 paper, Morgan and colleagues argue that the use of particular kinds of early tools was a socially transmitted skill, and that language developed so that humans could teach one another about these tools. They make a case that the tools common in that era were such that it wasn't good enough to merely imitate someone using them or use trial and error to figure them out. Rather, in experiments using modern-day humans, they showed that the understanding and use of these tools would have necessitated a language to go with them. The authors of this paper claim that humans leaped forward to the next technological era in proto-human development because they figured out a way to reach one another via language. We can imagine how this might have played out. A great new technology is excitedly shared in a tribe, but hand gestures and demonstrations are just not enough. We can almost picture the urgent necessity to create a more nuanced tool, words, and to use them effectively. To explain, to praise or criticize, to request or deny, to plan, even to lie or deceive, all of these require language, and language almost instantly allows us to access one another, to partake in the worlds of those around us in a way that's otherwise impossible. This is an incredible idea, that language, and indeed communication and social interaction in general, arose not spontaneously, but out of need. This suggests that sociability in our species is not optional, it's part of who we are, built right into our history and our DNA. There are many arguments for fine-tuning your social skills, but perhaps the most persuasive is that being social is so fundamentally a part of being human, you cannot consider a life successful unless a person has achieved some degree of social success. Psychologist Susan Pinker explored not the historical and evolutionary aspect of language and its value to humans, but the biological benefits right here in the present. The idea is that in-person social contact has profound effects on our nervous systems and our well-being in general. The so-called village effect is that people who have regular face-to-face contact with other human beings live happier, longer, more robust lives. Why? The suggestion is that social contact releases a cocktail of neurotransmitters in the brain that are powerful antidotes to stress and its effects on the mind and body. This will probably seem quite obvious to extroverts and those with extended social networks. Being sociable is almost quite literally a matter of life and death. Having harmonious family relationships, a healthy romantic partner, friends and allies, people in the community that you're on congenial terms with, children and parents, mentors, confidants, and spiritual teachers, all of these interactions have a physical impact on the human organism, modulating stress, strengthening the immune system, and making us more resilient to the challenges of life. This may explain why certain populations in certain countries are so long-lived. The diet, environment, or lifestyle of these populations known for longevity may certainly play a role, but there's a case to be made for village life and its benefits. After all, it's widely accepted today that humans evolved in small bands of no more than 100 people, and our need for this close social interaction among a tight-knit group is as fundamental a part of our well-being as it ever was. The effects are not just physical, though. There's a reason that psychologists or doctors will ask a new patient or client what their social support network is like. They know that solid social interaction has measurable effects on how well a patient copes with the struggles of life and how quickly they recover from any adversity. A recent study conducted by Emily Rogalski and colleagues at the Cognitive Neurology and Alzheimer's Disease Center, CNADC, in Chicago, has explored how staying social well into later life can have massive effects on brain health, staving off dementia, and giving elderly people the cognitive profile of people decades their junior. This won't come as any surprise to care workers or those who happen to have a sprightly older relative in their social circle. Staying social helps people remain mentally sharp. So-called superagers, those who are in their 80s but have the mental acuity of middle-aged people, had more friends overall and kept more socially active. As a consequence, their short and long-term memory seemed to benefit, and they had a more developed sense of their own autonomy, better self-acceptance, and a more robust purpose in life. It's also possible that these benefits have a physical correlate in the brain. There are suggestions that certain regions are literally thickened in those elder folks who are more social overall. Granted, these findings don't necessarily mean you have to be a relentless social butterfly, flitting from one social engagement to another, even if you don't enjoy it. The kind of healthy, beneficial socializing that Pinker is talking about is likely a subtler phenomenon, and we shouldn't forget that interactions with other people are also a prime source of stress in themselves. Certainly, many people would say that divorces, family animosity, bullying, social pressure, gossip, or feeling a lack of privacy all take years off of one's life. The value of being social is likely complex, just like other factors that we consider necessary conditions for good health, like diet and genetics. And while these studies focus on older people, there's no reason to doubt that the same mechanisms work for younger folks. If you care about living long and prospering, being sociable just may be as essential as quitting smoking, maintaining a healthy weight, and eating well. That's from the second edition of Patrick King's book, The Science of Social Intelligence, 45 Methods to Captivate People, Make a Powerful Impression, and Subconsciously Trigger Social Status and Value. It's available, of course, on Audible. Check out the show notes for the link, as well as the link to the full episode transcripts. And at bit.ly/PKConsulting, don't forget to sign up for your free ebook on conversational tactics. Thanks for joining us today. Talk to you Friday.